back to the Misadventures of the Millennial Version Podcast. I have a very, very special guest today, and I'm so excited for her to give us some really good information. And so what I'll do first is I'll let her introduce herself, and then we'll kind of talk about what today's topic is. So Shamira, take it away.
Thank you for having me. Hello, everyone. My name is Shamira. I go by Sexologist Shamira. So yes, I am a sexologist, and that is a real job title. So people always want to know what I do whenever I tell them that. So I have a private therapy practice here in Louisiana where I specialize in sex and relationship therapy. I see lots of different people who want to improve their sexual relationships, their individual selves, and just sexual intimacy or dysfunction within themselves or the relationship. So I also am a licensed clinical social worker. So as a sex therapist, I'm able to diagnose and treat people for sexual issues, concerns, and difficulties with different sexual and relationship problems. I have been featured in different media platforms such as Therapy for Black Girls podcast, the Huffington Post, Bustle, Sex with Dr. Jess blog. And I'm just happy to be here today, and I'm happy to discuss this topic with you today, Mia.
Yes. Speaking of topic, today's topic is religion and spirituality and how culture influences our outlook on sex and celibacy or abstinence. Y'all, I think that's a mouthful, and I hope y'all are sitting down because this is going to be an amazing conversation that needs to be had. So, as y'all know, at the Misadventures of the Millennial Version podcast, we discuss the unspoken truths about faith, life, love, and sex. And that's why we have sexologist Shamira with us today to help us talk about some of those unspoken truths so we can leave with some nuggets to have better relationships with ourselves and better relationships with the people around us.
Yes.
You ready, Shamira?
I am ready. I hope the listeners are ready.
Awesome. I hope so too.
Yes.
And so before we get into it all the way, you mentioned that a sex therapist is someone who is trained to provide therapy and treatment for different clients with different sexual issues and concerns. What made you get into this field?
Well, it wasn't my first choice. So I say it found me. So during my undergraduate career at Southern University in Baton Rouge, I was a public health educator for the Red Cross. And that's when HIV/AIDS was a program that many colleges adopted to teach young women on campus about the virus, right, and the disease. So what I would do is I would go around and I would do different trainings and seminars to young women on this campus to talk about sex and STIs. And what I did, I gathered my own research because I love research. I gathered my own research and I realized that most women on that level at the college age, they were not really worried or concerned or even knowledgeable about STIs and STDs. They were mostly concerned about preventing pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, spend a great deal talking about birth control and preventing pregnancies, but I found that that was the gist of what they were worried about. So I kind of went to graduate school with SUNO, and then later after life happened, had a kid. I went to, got married, of course. I had a kid, went to Widener University and their PhD program in human sexuality. That's when my sexuality knowledge kind of increased, exploded. Mm-hmm. I did more research. I'm getting certified as a sex therapist now. So I'm kind of doing lots and lots of advanced training in sexuality.
That's awesome. And it's really encouraging, especially as a licensed clinical social worker, which mm-hmm. is like the career path that I'm taking, being in grad school for social work right now.
Okay.
And seeing how there's so many different options out there and so many things that you can do to really thrive and love the profession that you're in. So snaps to sexologist Shamira. Okay.
Snaps to you as well for your journey.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's really inspiring, like hearing from other social workers and kind of watching y'all like on Instagram and just the internet and seeing how you're loving the profession and you are doing great work and you Absolutely. Are tailoring it to your own life and things that you're passionate about to help people. So I think that's awesome.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. And so let's get into this. So you mentioned that, of course, that a sex, what a sex therapist is. Kind of give the listeners an idea a little bit of some of the reasons that maybe people are referred to or decide to see a sex therapist.
We'll start Absolutely. With that. So yeah, so basically some of the reasons people go to a sex therapist are maybe, you know, how you hear couples saying, oh, my partner never wants to have sex, or I always wanted and they never wanted. So people will come in and they'll say, yeah, I don't think I'm attractive to my partner because they never initiate sex or they don't want sex. Or they'll say, we have communication problems. I often see a lot of people with vulvas who say, I've never orgasmed before. I have issues with that. Or people who are just really ashamed of their mm-hmm. sexuality and not able to enjoy their sexuality.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. And so a lot of times whenever we think of like therapy or we think of like couples therapy, we just automatically assume that something like this, like a sex therapist, is for couples. And on mm-hmm. today's topic, speaking of celibacy, I want us to kind of discuss in a little bit how a sex therapist can, or how seeing a sex therapist can be beneficial to someone who is on a celibacy journey.
Absolutely.
But before we get into that, I want to kind of know a little bit about, based on your experience, I'm sure you work with a diverse group of clients. Have you worked with clients who are honest, who are celibate, were virgins, and what were some of the benefits that you saw in those relationships?
Okay, absolutely. So I just finished working with a very young couple who decided to remain celibate. And when I say celibate, I mean they decide to abstain from sex until they got married. They're engaged to be married. And so their wedding is in a couple of months. And so I kind of worked with them during their premarital phase and helped them build up what their sexuality would look like. But the pros for them were they really liked the fact that they were able to connect with each other emotionally. So their focus was more on building intimacy in their relationship. And a lot of times when I work with people who decide to remain celibate until they get married, they do report an increase in an emotional bond and an emotional connection. They love the feeling of feeling closer to each other. They get to determine what makes their partners happy, or they get to discover what makes their partners happy outside of the bedroom, which contributes to overall relationship satisfaction. So those are great benefits. A lot of people like the exploration too in talking about sex, because as we'll talk about later, even if you're not having sex, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't talk about it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think it's super encouraging. And hopefully anybody listening can be encouraged to know, like, hey, if you are deciding to be celibate, going to see a sex therapist is not going to negate that. Like, a sex therapist will work with you based on where you are, just like the couple that you mentioned, in exploring, making sure that they have positive thoughts about what sex is and what that can look like for them in the future, and helping them, you know, nurture and create those boundaries while they're still engaged, like the couple that you mentioned. So I think it's awesome to know that there are benefits that come with being celibate.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
And I think in addition to that, even just from a Christian standpoint, like a lot of times you did mention that a lot of times people decide to be celibate because it's for religious reasons. And maybe some people decide, you know, to take that journey for other reasons. But in addition to knowing, okay, if you're a Christian, this is something that you know God is pleased with, but also knowing it's going to benefit you. So I think that's really mm-hmm. encouraging and important to know. Now, we all know the struggle is real for anybody who's celibate out there or anybody who's thinking about it. And so I want us to kind of talk about, we mentioned the positive things with it. What are some of the challenges that come with someone who decides to be celibate?
So I'm glad you mentioned the religious part, because I often see a lot of clients who do report challenges because of their religion. Whenever I see any clients, I always take sex history on my clients' sex histories. And that's one of my favorite parts of the job, is doing the sex histories, because I get to learn a lot about their thought processes about sex, their behaviors and where all that stems from, if there are any sexual traumas, their values related to sex come from that. And some of the challenges that I find include social pressure, shame, guilt, and embarrassment that comes from either religion, that comes from their family of origin, or that comes from things that they learn culturally from society, or things that we tell ourselves sometimes as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As it relates to the sex history, so one of the main questions I asked is, what was the conversation about sex like growing up for you? Mm-hmm. And many people will start off, I've gotten variations of, oh, well, I grew up in a Christian home, and then there's something that follows, right? And then some people say, oh, I grew up Catholic, so we couldn't do this. Oh, we didn't talk about sex. Like, that's not something that we really talked about in our household. Or if we did, the conversation was, you just don't have sex until you get married, right? Which I get that, but I also, and what we found and what research shows us is, that's not beneficial all the way, just telling people to abstain from sex until marriage. Yeah. So the religious challenge for a lot of people is harmful to their overall relationship and their overall self-discovery as it relates to sexuality, because what's next? After telling them to abstain and to wait, then what's next? There's nothing wrong with that, because like I said, I start with where everyone else is. So I honor your values and your boundaries, mm-hmm. but I also help you to relinquish a lot of that shame, guilt, and embarrassment.
Mm-hmm. That is really awesome, because it's like how I think we talked about before, how you just mentioned that, you know, the abstinence part only, saying don't have sex, don't do it. And that's kind of, that's a common message, especially growing up in religious homes. But I think, like you said, no matter what background the family comes from, a lot of times people just don't want to talk about sex. People are doing it, but they don't necessarily
don't want to talk about it,
which I think is so interesting. And so it's another thing, how you say kind of relinquishing and shedding those, maybe those, thoughts that kind of like hold you bondage in a way in your relationships. For example, I know I've talked to different women who were virgins when they got married, and it was just like, okay, don't have sex, don't talk about it, don't think about it, and here I do, and go have sex, and it's supposed to be enjoyable. But that wasn't their experience, and they shared that they wish they were more informed, and that they wish that someone had talked to them. And one of them even was like, I wish I had gone to a sex therapist before I got married, because I would have had a better idea about my body. I would have understood more about, you know, sex is a positive thing. It is meant for me to enjoy it in my marriage. And so I think that's really, really awesome. And that's also the part about, you said, taking away like the shame. And so a lot of times people kind of think that, and I want you to talk about this more a little bit, the shame part, where do you think that shame just comes from? Just people not being comfortable talking about sex? Do you think it's just because maybe, you know, people think sex is bad? Like, why do you feel like that shame is there? Like so much, so common.
Well, I think it comes from a few different places, right? One of the main places I see it coming from is a place of discomfort. So like if we talk about religion and spirituality, for example, a lot of times our religious institutions discuss sexual immorality a lot. Mm-hmm. And so if you're constantly getting messages that sex is bad, or sex, you know, outside of marriage is bad, and your sexual thoughts, you know, you're because of what you think, you that's what you are. So your sexual thoughts are bad. And so now you have these sexual urges, and then you are feeling this intense shame about your desires and your urges, because the messaging that you've been getting is that you're not supposed to have this, and if you do, you're sinning against God. Yeah. But, you know, a way for us to get away from that is understanding that sex is designed for pleasure, right?
Right.
Sex is pleasure is your birthright. Whether you're married or not, you're still a sexual being. Now, I'm not saying that means you have to have sex, but that means to recognize that you're still a sexual person. You're inherently sexual. And if you read the Song of Solomon, you will know about all the pleasure that is presented in Song of Solomon as it relates to sexuality, right? Right. So you mentioned people who are virgins and then they get married, right? Mm-hmm. So that happens a whole lot to people who are virgins and then they decide to get married. All right, so I've been waiting. I haven't fornicated. And now it's my wedding night, honeymoon. Yes, we're finally going to do it. We've been waiting. We've not sinned against God. God is going to be so pleased. The marriage bed is undefiled. Boom. We get in the bed. No sparks fly. Nothing happens. we have sex a few more times, we don't like it. Now you're in my office telling me that I don't know if this relationship is going to work because I waited for sex and it wasn't good. Now what do I do? And it's like, listen, you can't just shift your mentality after I do. So right. we've got to start changing the messaging that we're sending out, because now you've already told me that my thoughts and my urges, I'm not supposed to have those. I'm supposed to suppress them until I get married. Mm-hmm. So I've suppressed them until marriage, and now it's marriage. How do I unsuppress them? Like, what do mm-hmm. I do with these thoughts and these urges, mm-hmm. right? Waiting does not automatically make your sex life great.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think to kind of piggyback off of that, like you said, waiting does not automatically make your sex life great. And I think it just kind of goes right back to like removing that shame and creating like a safe space, like this podcast, creating a safe space mm-hmm. to have those conversations, the real life conversations, and understanding, hey, you can be celibate. Like, if that's a choice that you've made, that's a positive thing. God is pleased with that. And at the same time, you don't have to think that, oh my gosh, I'm not normal because I'm having these thoughts. Oh my goodness, I'm, you know, having these urges and things like that, and not feel comfortable talking to someone about that. And that's why therapists and sex therapists exist, because
absolutely
someone can help you to say, okay, is this is what your boundary is. This is a choice that you've made. Okay, how can we work together to help you, you know, from the inside, really mentally first, and then, you know, on the outside. So I think that
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, so kind of mentioned how religion and spirituality plays a really big part in someone making that decision to be celibate until marriage. And so we talked about the positive parts about celibacy, and then we kind of talked about some of the cons. But what, from a practical standpoint, what can religious institutions do? Because that is the biggest source of where people make that decision. What can those institutions do to better equip and better prepare people who are like, okay, I want to be celibate, but I need more information? So what can churches do to help in that area?
First of all, I love what you're doing with this podcast. You mentioned safe space. This is a safe space for people who have these same questions. There are so many people who need to hear this, who need to hear, oh my goodness, this is exactly what I've been feeling, but I don't have anybody to talk about that with. I can't go to my church because I'm going to be judged. I'm going to be shamed. And the pastor might even preach a sermon about me for bringing it up. I can't talk to my parents because they might not be okay with it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to my friends because that's a whole nother level of shame, right? Yeah. So people are dealing with lots of shame, and that's a whole different type of sexual trauma, where shame is weaponized to make people feel bad about their bodies and their sexual needs, and cause people to have all types of form of self-hatred. Mm-hmm. So sexual shame is when we feel strongly humiliated and disgusted towards our own body and our sexual identity. It shows up in relationships. It shows up in our intimacy. It shows up in issues with consent. It shows up in ourselves mm-hmm. and the way we look at ourselves. Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother thing. So what institutions can do to kind of lessen the effects of sexual trauma on people is exactly what you said, is to be a safe space, be a place where people feel comfortable discussing their sexuality, where they won't feel judged, where they won't feel like they're going to be gossiped about, where they won't feel like somebody's going to present to them as arrogant. You know, churches can discuss sex positivity by still honoring the Bible, by still honoring the messaging, right? You can hire us. You can hire sex therapists. You can hire sex coaches and sex educators to come in and to create specific programs that are catered or that are geared towards people who are celibate and who are abstaining from sex until marriage mm-hmm. and showing them what to do after I do. Helping them to be okay with their bodies, helping them to understand and normalize their sexual urges, their sexual desires, and not telling them that they're a bad person for having these sexual urges and these desires, but by still also honoring God's word. We can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The two, sex or the topic in the discussion of sex, is not mutually exclusive to
absolutely not
that is taught in Christianity and religion. So I think it's really awesome because God created sex. And if we can talk about all the other things in the Bible, I think that we'll be better equipped to make better decisions and understand why certain decisions may be healthier for us, may not be as healthy for us. And so I definitely agree with what you said, that because religion and church and all that plays a big part in why people make that choice.
Absolutely.
Like, okay, you got to take full ownership of it, you know, to equip people to make better choices. So yeah, I think that's amazing.
Absolutely.
So there's going to be some people who are like, oh my goodness, no, we don't want to do that because it's going to give our youth these ideas. Ooh, let me have sex. It's going to, mm-hmm. you know, put these thoughts into people's minds. So what is something you would tell them to understand that, okay, that's not true? And is there proof that bringing up the subject of sex is going to make someone want to go have sex?
So that's often, a concern with people in, you know, different religious institutions, even people at home with parents are not wanting their kids to get any comprehensive sex ed. They think if they hear about it, then that is going to prompt them to want to do it. And mm-hmm. anyway, no. You know, that's also a myth. It's been debunked so many times. Research even shows that abstinence-only programs have failed us and have contributed to more of the opposite of what we want them to contribute to. Research also shows that the more informed, comprehensive education and information that we give to people, especially young people, about sex in their bodies and sexuality, helps them more. It gives them the power of choice. Information is power. If somebody has information, it not necessarily is not going to make them want to have sex, but it's going to actually prompt them to be able to make informed decisions about their body. And that's when we start talking about consent and what that looks like as well, because that's another part of the sex ed messages are forgetting. It's the consent part, right? Mm-hmm. And first of all, what's so bad about thinking about sex? That contributes to sexual shame. When we say, oh no, I don't want them talking about it because they're going to think about it. What does that mean? What message are we sending to people mm-hmm. about sex when we say, I don't want people thinking about sex? Is it bad? And if it is, then why are we having sex? Why are we telling people to wait till marriage to have something that's not bad? So right. we are sending people mixed messages, right? Mm-hmm. Also, as it relates to giving them the information, we get to discuss consent and what that looks like to say, yes, I want to do this. And this is how I can do it to protect myself.
Yes.
And if I don't want to do it, this is the way I can say I don't want to do it. Because mm-hmm. what's happening is even in marriages, we have people who are doing things that they don't want to do. But because we're told that this is our partner and this is what we're supposed to do, we have to allow ourselves to accept it. Mm-hmm. And that is a bad message about sex.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think what we always, just in general, and not even just like in religious settings, but just in society in general, it's always this idea of, okay, men enjoy sex, women don't. But mm-hmm. God created men and women, and literally women, there's parts of our bodies that were specifically created for pleasure. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that, even though if you are deciding, okay, being celibate, okay, even if you are single, like still understand that when you decide to, or in some people's case, when you decide, okay, I'm going to go ahead and get married, that it is your birthright, like you said, to enjoy it. It's not mm-hmm. just for the husband or whatever to enjoy. So I'm glad you said that. I have to give you some snaps for that, because I think that is where, like, the people that I've talked to, the women that I've talked to in the past who waited until they were married and felt like they weren't informed, they were so focused on, okay, is my husband going to enjoy this? What can I do to, you know, so that he can be happy and so mm-hmm. he can be pleased, but not realizing, girl,
It's for you too. Absolutely. It is for you. But, you know, and I'll say this, a lot of persons who have relationships as it relates to religion, their sexual style is more of what's considered traditional couple sexual style. So both of the partners agree that they go on a traditional male-female relationship approach, where the man's focus is to initiate sex and to have it and want it often. And the woman's focus is to be more affectionate and nurturing and focus on children and marriage and family. Mm-hmm. And so becoming non-sexual in this type of setting is usually looked at as a normal part of aging, right? So mm-hmm. a lot of people, especially the woman in the relationship, is not fulfilled sexually because it's what my husband wants, or what, you know, what he wants is what matters. And it's what you both want, right? Yeah. We need to have a collaborative approach on what sex looks like in our relationships. Mm-hmm. And even if you decide to become, to be celibate, a great part of being celibate and seeing somebody, you know, seeing a sex therapist while you're celibate is self-discovery and allowing you to understand what self-discovery is, understand what your boundaries, and help you to decide how you like to approach sex when you do get ready to have sex, so that you won't feel like sex isn't for you, so that you won't have this intense sexual shame and have to endure this other level of sexual trauma.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really glad that you said that, because like you have already, you know, reiterated, it's not, it's a joint effort in that relationship. And it's important for the women particularly, because, you know, women are typically told, okay, this is what you do. This is, you know, this is what is expected of you as a wife. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, it's important for both parties to understand this is, it's for meant for pleasure for you too. So I'm really glad that you said that.
Yes.
Now, I want to kind of understand a little bit more. So when I shared a little bit about different women that I've met who, you know, waited, were virgins when they got married, and what do you think that, like, just from a cultural standpoint, just in general in society, what is a message kind of that has been sent to women that kind of plays a part in making them not being comfortable with sex or enjoying sex?
A message that women get that's not comfortable with sex. First of all, women go down this aisle in grocery stores, and there's all these products that tell you what to do and how to clean, you know, your sexual organs and all of this. And so that sends a message. First of all, I'm already getting messages that I shouldn't do this. Now I'm getting messages that if I do it, it might smell bad, because now I smell bad. There's this whole aisle of stuff that is teaching me how to clean my vulva because I smell bad. So that's one message that a lot of people get. And a lot of people, it also contributes to sexual shame from a lot of people. And then being a virgin is also, you know, that's a double-edged sword, because on one end, we have some women who are definitely praised for being a virgin. And there are some women who are shunned for being a virgin. So many people feel like they can't win for losing. If we learn to teach people sex positivity, we won't be dealing with all of people dealing with different types of sexual shame and sexual trauma, because people will be comfortable with themselves. They'd be able to express their own sexuality in ways that are pleasurable and experimental for themselves. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so I think if in case anyone is listening and they're wondering, what does sex positive mean? Sex positive, like Shamira was saying, is basically having a constructive, healthy, positive view about what sex means, what it's for, and how it applies to you, and how it can be a pleasurable thing for you.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, even if you are celibate and you're not married yet and you're, you know, abstaining from sex, having a positive, healthy view of sex, what that means and how that applies to your life, and not being ashamed of the topic. You know, a lot of times I just remember, like, years ago, I'm guilty of this too. Like, hearing the word sex or saying the word sex, it was like, okay, my voice goes down because I said the word sex, and I don't want anybody to hear me saying it. And it's like, now it's just like, it's so freeing, because you understand that there's nothing wrong with you, you know, and you can make that choice, and you can still honor that commitment that you've made and still be informed to make better decisions for yourself. So
absolutely perfect. Yeah, yes.
That's great. And so I'm also really glad that you mentioned what churches and religious institutions can do to kind of create a culture and environment within that space so that people feel comfortable and so that people don't feel ashamed. Mm-hmm. So I think that's awesome. And I think it's also awesome that you work with clients who have made the decision to be celibate and those who haven't, and you're able to see what those benefits are for that couple, and that couple is able to see the benefits for themselves. So I think that's amazing. What about the parents who were like, you know what, you already said, okay, yes, I should be initiating these conversations with my youth, because even me, I work with teenage girls, and when it's the topic has come up, okay, is this a conversation that you want to have with your parents, or what is that experience like? And they express, I want to have this conversation with my parents, but they haven't brought it to me and I'm scared to initiate because they're going to assume the worst and it's just mm-hmm. a complete breakdown. What are some things that a parent or guardian can do to initiate that conversation, make it a healthy and an open, positive conversation for their youth?
Right. Again, a big reason why people don't talk about sex is because their lack of comfort in talking about sex. And that goes for parents as well. Like I told you earlier, many people like lose it when I tell them we start teaching our kids about sex at age 2. Mm-hmm. One of my kids, I think we started at 1, like I said, because he was a little bit more advanced. But as soon as we start potty training and they start touching themselves, we start teaching them the correct terms for their genitals.
Yeah.
We teach them the anatomical terms for their genitals, just like we teach them eyes, nose, mouth, mm-hmm. ears. We teach them the right words, and that is so important. Yeah. That will dismantle a lot of shame. That could also prevent your child from being sexually assaulted, or have you know if your child is being sexually assaulted or not, right? Yeah. But first, parents have to be comfortable with their own sexuality first. And if not, you have to find somebody who you trust and who's informed enough to talk to your child about sexuality, right?
Yeah.
And there are developmental and sexually appropriate things to talk about sex with each child at each level. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be some times when children are going to touch themselves, and that's going to be totally appropriate. As a parent, our role is to discuss what's happening, teach them what that means. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times when children are touching themselves, especially at the age of 4 and 3 and 5, mm-hmm. They're not doing it because of a sexual need.
Right.
They're doing it because it's soothing. It's self-soothing. It feels good. There are going to be times when they do it because they recognize that it's a sexual release, or that there's sexual pleasure. And mm-hmm. so that becomes another conversation.
Yeah.
But the way to approach these conversations is to find out what they know about sex already. Depending on their age, find out what they already know and start there.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be as simple as you might hear a song on the radio that might reference sex, or you might see something on TV, because it's all around us. And children have so much access to sex, they probably know more than you think they know already. So starting with what starting with what they know, because I had a conversation with my son, blew me away. But they know. So starting with, what do you, such and such said this, what do you think about that?
Yeah.
And just see what they say. And then you want to dispel any myths. Yeah. You want to make sure that you create an atmosphere that's open and safe, because when children feel safe, they're more prone to ask questions and learn. They trust you. They want to come to you with their questions. Their friends don't know. So make it easy for them to do so. And if you need extra help, get extra help. SexPositiveFamilies.com is the number one resource to learn how to talk to your children about sex.
You said sexpositivefamilies.com?
Yes.
Oh,
they're also on social media as Sex Positive Families. But Destin, I recommend that everywhere. I use the information in my own household, and I am a sexologist, and I still use that information. So we've got to be equipped to communicate our sexuality, not our sexuality, but sexuality to our kids. But also, we want to create an atmosphere where our kids see us being sex positive at home,
mm-hmm.
where if we are coupled, they see us engaging in intimate play with our partners, hugging each other, kissing each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that will also dismantle some of the shame and taboo around sexuality and intimacy.
Yeah, I think it's so great that you said that, because a lot of times we kind of just have this box of what we think that sex and sexuality means. And we think that, okay, if I'm celibate, that doesn't apply to me. So, okay, I shouldn't think about that. Okay, that I need to just completely block that out. But I think it's so important that you said that being sex positive in general, even as a celibate person, will allow you to see, okay, what are these thoughts that I've had growing up, and how is it affecting the way that I see myself, that I'm
mm-hmm.
uncomfortable with myself? Am I uncomfortable talking about sex? And understanding, okay, let me retrain the way that I think.
Yes.
See how this can affect my relationships in a more positive way, particularly after I get married. So I'm really
And don't judge yourself. That's perfect what you just said. don't judge yourself for what you know, because you, we are, you know, we are only creatures of habit in our environment. Yeah. So we've learned a lot of things. And as it comes to sex positivity, celibacy, abstinence, we've got to unlearn a lot of things in order to, you know, learn more things. Mm-hmm. So don't judge yourself. Don't judge your kids about what they know. Allow yourself to feel whatever you're feeling about what's happening. Deal with your feelings, heal those, and then move forward with what you know to be true.
Yes, yes, yes. That is awesome, Shamara.
I'm glad you think so.
I just have one question for you, and then I want listeners to know how they can get in contact with you, because I know that you don't just serve clients face-to-face. You serve online as well, so I'm I want them to know about that.
Absolutely.
My last question for you is, what are some practical things for somebody who is a virgin and waiting till marriage? And what are some things that they can do to prepare themselves, so they're not in the same, you know, situation as someone else who kind of had a bad experience? And what are some things that, and would you suggest that they see a sex therapist?
Absolutely. The reason being is because there's so much societal pressure out there for people who are virgins, right? Because there's so much messaging that's telling us that, you know, you got to be sexual, you got to have sex. And even as a sex positive person, my goal isn't to tell people that they should have sex or sex is the best thing ever. My goal is to help people maximize on their own choices and boundaries, giving them options and information so that they can make the best choices that fit for them. So going to see a sex therapist would help you to understand and accept your own sexuality, all while keeping your boundaries. So basically, deciding what you want to do, how you want to do it, thinking about how you like to approach sex, even if you don't want to do it at all, giving you information about your body. Mm-hmm. If you have questions that you might think are too taboo for you to ask a friend, a person at your church, or a family member, a sex therapist or coach is somebody that you could ask those questions to, that's going to give you an unbiased, non-judgmental, informed answer. And that's what we need on your journey to discovering yourself, right? Yeah. Whether you decide to be a virgin forever, that's up to you. If you want to explore what sexuality looks like while still maintaining and honoring your boundaries and values, whatever that may be, a sex therapist or coach or educator can definitely help you with that. So also just figure out what your reasoning is and talk to somebody who can help you. If you don't want to see a therapist at this time, you can read books. Like, there's a book that I will forever recommend, and it's for people. It doesn't matter if you're a woman, a man, whomever. Come As You Are is a book from Emily Nagoski. Yes, right?
Yeah, I've heard of that book. I actually haven't.
Absolutely. That book is amazing and helping to teach us about ourselves and our anatomy and being comfortable with yourself and letting go of some of the shame. Yeah. Some people are dealing with sexual trauma, so Healing Sex is another book that can help you.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it really does start with yourself and understanding more about yourself, and also not judging yourself and understanding, okay, how can I create a life that's better for myself, you know, and
absolutely
remove some of those negative things and be patient with ourselves too.
That's it.
That's another thing that is so important. Because a lot of times in my experience, like, I'm like, okay, I recognize this problem that I have. Okay, let me go ahead and fix it. And then I'm like upset with myself because I haven't fixed it quote unquote fixed it as fast as I think that I should. But life is a journey. And I think as long as we have the time and as long as we're waking up and we're like, okay, what can I do next to, you know, to do better for myself? I think that's really all that matters. So I'm just super glad that we finally were able to have this conversation.
So am I. I'm so glad that you decided to do this, because so many people wouldn't have the courage to talk about this, right? And it's so needed, because just know that you're going to help a lot of people out by talking about this topic. I'm definitely going to be sharing this with my clients who I work with who are celibate, because they need to know that, you know, somebody like me understands me, and there's some answers out there.
Yes, yes. We're all trying to figure it out. So as long as we're all doing our part to try to help and to, you know, make it that way, make it a more positive way, then I'm all for it. So before we go, I want everyone to know, how can they get in touch with Shamara and how can they work with you?
Most people follow me on social media. If that's your thing, social media is huge for a lot of people. So I'm on social media platforms, especially Instagram, at Sexologist Shamira. And my website is conquestcounseling.com. So C-O-N-Q-U-E-S-T counseling.com. I also do sex coaching. I do sex therapy, consulting. You can contact me via either of those platforms. My coaching website will be done in a couple of weeks. So hopefully in the next 2 weeks, my coaching website will be, I had to do some remakes. So that'll be done really soon, but I'm still seeing clients. But good. You can contact me again at Sexologist Shamira on Instagram or Facebook and conquestcounseling.com.
Awesome. Well, Shamira, that is all I have for you today. I appreciate you again so much for this conversation.
No problem. I appreciate you for having it.
Thank you. Keep doing the amazing work that you're doing with your clients so they can have a better, you know, a more sex positive life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's my goal.
Yes, that is the goal. So thank you again so much. And that is all we have for you today. Enjoy the rest of your day, Shamira.
You do as well, Mia. Thank you.